Welcome to the Wisconsin Forward podcast, a product of the Civic Media Network. I'm your host, Matt Rothschild, and on the podcast, we'll try to explain the riddle of the swing state and how we can move Wisconsin forward. You know, my friends and relatives from outside of Wisconsin are always asking me, what's up with Wisconsin? How can you have two U.S. senators who are so far apart in Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson? And Wisconsin, by the way, used to be such a progressive state. What happened over there? First of all, the split personality of the Badger State is nothing new. Wisconsin does have a fine progressive pedigree. It voted for Abe Lincoln twice by pretty big margins. It was home to the great leader of the progressive movement, Fighting Bob La Follette, who was governor and senator here, and who championed the direct election of senators, along with a whole range of other Democratic small-d reforms like workers' comp in 1911 and a minimum wage law in 1913. Back then, Wisconsin was known as the Laboratory of Democracy. On June 10, 1919, Wisconsin also became the first state to ratify the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which, of course, gave women the right to vote. And Wisconsin was the first state to let public sector workers join a union. But Wisconsin, remember, was also home to tail gunner Joe McCarthy, who defeated La Follette's son, Senator Bob La Follette Jr., in the Republican primary in 1946 on the way to becoming senator himself. Joe McCarthy was then reelected in 1952 by a comfortable margin. Then there's this. The voters of Wisconsin went for Richard Nixon all three times. A fact that surprised and kind of appalled me. Since 2010, it's been exhausting politically here in Wisconsin after Scott Walker became governor and both the state assembly and the state senate flipped over to the Republicans. They gerrymandered the maps, ensuring their hold on power. They decimated the unions and they pushed a hard right agenda, turning Wisconsin into a laboratory for reaction. Every election since then, at almost every level, has been hotly contested and highly partisan, with Walker finally losing to Tony Evers in 2018 by slightly more than 1%. So how do we make sense of all this? Well, here's Todd Albaugh, host of the Todd Albaugh Show on Civic Media.
I grew up in southwest Wisconsin, the beautiful Driftless, as I believe Lee Sherman Dreyfus, former Republican governor, used to call it the 23rd Psalm place. And It's a great part of the state. Richland County, where I'm from, I believe I'm correct in saying, up until the last presidential election, it was one of 15 counties, if memory serves, in the entire United States of America who had voted for the winning candidate for president in like the last 50 years or something like that. So I grew up in literally one of the swingiest parts of Wisconsin, which is a swing state. Some people look at that and say, how weird is that? Like, how could a rural county in southwest Wisconsin vote for George Bush and, you know, Joe Biden, or George Bush and Barack Obama? How can they vote for Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan? You know, it's weird, right? And I tell people, I think we're at least the part of the state that I'm from, southwestern and western Wisconsin, we're really big on just at least getting to know or feel like we get to know people. And after George W. Bush lost Richland County in western Wisconsin in 2000, lost the state to Al Gore in 2000, he made a point, and I can tell you this because back in the day I was a Republican. I was actually the chairman of the Republican Party in Richland County. And I went to a third district, which is on the western side of Wisconsin, Republican Party meeting, which they brought in national people from the party. And you could ask people who were there. I somewhat jokingly, but not entirely, got down on my knees in the aisle at this meeting above 100 people. And I said, I am literally on my knees begging you to bring the president to western Wisconsin. Now, I don't think it was just because Todd did that, but there were other people that felt the same way. And my prayers were answered. And George W. Bush did a bus tour from Eau Claire to La Crosse, down through the Driftless, stopped in Richland Center, the first time that a president, I believe since JFK, had been to Richland County and campaigned there. And then went down kind of Dodgeville and these little burgs of Cobb and Cuba City and places that no presidential candidate had been to, at least not since Jimmy Carter went to Mississippi tour back in 1980 or 76, whatever it was. But people thought, wow, because I helped coordinate that appearance by W in Richland Center. And we had, and I think this speaks to your question in a long-winded way, we had hardcore Democrats from Richland County that came out and said, I'm not going to clap real hard, but it is the president of the United States. And I want to tell my kids, I brought my kids and my grandkids, and I want them to say that they saw a living president of the United States. And there was this respect for the office, and there's this, you know, we feel like they cared enough to come here. And George Bush won Richland County in 2004 and subsequently the state in 2004. So I think that Richland County, I think that Wisconsin as a whole, generally speaking, we like to see people. I think that's why Trump won Wisconsin in 16 and Hillary didn't. She just took it for granted. She didn't show up here. And it's about, you know, Tommy Thompson was the quintessential Wisconsin politician. You know, he cheerleaded for Wisconsin. He had these, a lot of people call him hokey, but, you know, one of them was he had a lot of these stops. You know, he end the speech with saying, ladies and gentlemen, Wisconsin's the kind of state where you come home from a vacation, your neighbors mowed your yard for you, and they come out in the front porch with a six-pack of Miller Lite in one hand and a bag of cheese curds in the other and say, welcome home, friend. And everybody connected because at some level, everybody knew somebody like that. And I think that the politicians that maybe don't do the Tommy shtick, but at their own way, in their own way, connect with voters tend to be the people who win. And the most recent example of that, I think Tammy Baldwin is knocking it out of the park right now with her media message.
And the anecdotes you mentioned about George W. coming to small towns in southwestern Wisconsin and Tommy shtick also suggest that, you know, people in Wisconsin are open-minded. A lot of people in Wisconsin are open-minded. I mean, they may have their teams that they support sports-wise, and maybe that rubs off onto their cheering or rooting for whoever they choose politically. But many Wisconsinites are willing to take a listen anyway. Yeah.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And again, I unfortunately, and I think it's just one of the most tragic things in my life. I'm 54. As a Wisconsinite, I think it's one of the most tragic things in this state in my lifetime is what Scott Walker did to the political system, because it was pre-Trumpism, in my opinion. It was this, and it started really with, in my opinion, back in the late 90s with Chuck Kwala on the Democratic side and Scott Jensen on the Republican side, two legislators, leaders of legislature. It used to be that politicians would fight like hell on the floor and on policy, and then they'd walk four blocks down to a place called the Avenue, and they'd buy each other a drink and say, you SOB, you really took it to me today, what do you want? And they'd sit there and they'd actually have dinner together and say, all right, what's your bottom line? And they'd make laws over a cocktail and a steak dinner. And with Jensen and Kwala, they started forbidding freshman members in their caucuses on both sides from even being seen with a member from the other side, or they'd have retribution in terms of their committee chairmanships. And Walker did that in spades, and he started this absolutism where we're not talking to them absolutely. And it divided this state in a way that I've never seen. We still haven't fully recovered. And then you get Trump, which just puts gas on the fire.
So one theory about Wisconsin's split personality and who wins and who loses here is candidate-based, how good the candidates are, who shows up and who doesn't show up. Everybody knows that Hillary Clinton didn't show up in Wisconsin, and that had a huge effect, even though she was planned to originally, and then she had to cancel an event in Green Bay because there was a crisis, so she didn't end up showing up at all, and that did cost her here in Wisconsin. But there are other theories about how we got here and where we are today. And for this other explanation, here's Jay Heck, who's the executive director of Common Cause. He's been with Common Cause for almost 30 years.
I'm Jay Heck, the executive director of Common Cause Wisconsin.
And how long have you been there, Jay?
29 years, Matt.
Wow, that's quite a while. You get a trophy for that. I hope to give you a watch if and when you ever retire.
Some say it's because I've been unable to find a job anywhere else. No one else would hire me.
Well, you must have come across this question in your time there, which is, what's up with Wisconsin? Why is this such a weird state? You got this is a state that brought you Fighting Bob LaFollette. It's a state that unfortunately gave the country Joe McCarthy. We now have Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson. What's up with this schizophrenic state?
Matt, as you know, Wisconsin is not only one of the most closely divided, evenly divided between the parties states in the country, but it's also one of the most schizophrenic. And when I moved to Wisconsin in the late 1980s from Washington, D.C., it still had the reputation as being a beacon for democracy. It was a state where you had a legislature that regularly changed hands between Republicans and Democrats, same with governors, but there always seemed to be a bipartisan consensus that was reached. And generally speaking, the two parties tried to do what was best for the citizens of Wisconsin. That culture changed in the 90s with the advent of Newt Gingrich, the Contract on America, and then the polarization of Wisconsin politics in the name of Scott Jensen and Chuck Quala and all the rest. And so it's been a steady devolution over the years of what's happened in this state. Sad. I don't think it's beyond repair, but there is certainly this has been a long time in the making.
You know, when I got to Wisconsin in 1983, and I was born in the Chicago area, so I knew a lot about corruption in politics. And it was almost a joke here because the politics in Wisconsin was so clean. I mean, there it was a scandal if someone bought lunch for a lobbyist bought lunch for a politician. That was a scandal. You know, it's a little different now.
The big scandal when I came in the late 80s was a lobbyist buying Packer tickets for legislators. And of course, that was outrageous because you couldn't get Packer tickets. They're impossible to obtain. So that was serious business. But that was the kind of corruption that we were looking at. And so what's happened over the years, and I like to make this analogy with Chicago, you know, at least in Chicago, the politicians are kind of honest about the corruption. It's, you know, it's almost a point of pride. In Wisconsin, it's very, very much undercover, and nobody admits to it. But in many cases, the corruption is, I would say, more insidious because of the hypocrisy that's involved.
And what kind of corruption are you referring to?
Well, the legislative caucus scandal in 2001-2002, the greatest political scandal in Wisconsin's history, and the only time in the history of the United States where you had the leadership of both political parties in both legislative chambers simultaneously indicted and charged with felony corruption in office. And this was illegal fundraising on state time using state employees. And it was really a whole mastermind by the legislative leadership to inundate Wisconsin with dark money illegally at the time, and to transform their political power into something much more absolute than the legislature ever had in the state. And that, of course, led to, I think, just a continuation of that, most famously after 2010 with the election of Scott Walker in the Republican-controlled legislature. Not just Act 10, but all of the other anti-democracy measures that they rammed through in the immediate aftermath of 2011, including the most partisan gerrymander of any state in the country, the imposition of the most severe extreme voter photo ID law in the country, the destruction of public financing in this state, and then Act 10, which was transforming Wisconsin into a one-party political state with the destruction of the public employee union. So, you know, that sort of thing that happened, once you open the door to that corruption, and Governor Jim Doyle, who was elected on a reform slate in 2002, did absolutely nothing to clean up Wisconsin. He had an opportunity to do so and just didn't take advantage of it. That's why we're here. And I think it's important people understand that this just didn't occur overnight. This has been a systematic destruction of democracy in this state. And it took a long time for it to devolve. It's going to take a while to fix, but I'm happy to say that I think in just this year we've begun to turn the corner in that regard. So I'm optimistic about the long-term future of Wisconsin.
We'll hear more from Jay Heck in a future edition of Wisconsin Forward, but I wanted to bring in Trygve Olson of the Lincoln Project, who's a regular guest on the Todd Albaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Because Trygve makes an important point about the people of Wisconsin, that we are not really so much at each other's throats as you might think, reading about this red-blue divide here in Wisconsin. Here's Trygve Olson, a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project and a regular guest on the Todd Albaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. When you're in D.C. and people just say, you know, what's up with Wisconsin? I don't can't figure it out. What do you tell them?
It's just the nature of the state. It can go either way. They vote on people. I mean, all my buddies, they like Tammy Baldwin. You know why they like Tammy Baldwin? Because apparently she came into a bar on Main Street in River Falls. The word got around that she was great to drink a beer with at the bar and like a really nice person. And I can tell you, having worked with her when she was in the state legislature, she's one of the best people I've ever encountered in politics. So
she is a super nice
person.
They
kind of read it right.
Yeah.
She's just super.
She shows up and she has a great staff and she does great constituent service.
I just think there's a huge opportunity here for you know, Wisconsin is a slightly right of center state at the end of the day, but the people who are slightly right are pragmatic and they're not really represented by what the Republican Party has become. And there's a huge opportunity if Democrats nominate candidates, you know, north of Highway 8 who aren't running like they're on the isthmus in Dane County and are guys like Bob Jauch and Bresky and the kind of people that Tommy Thompson woke up every morning and said, hey, how can I go to work with them? Or Polly Williams or Gary George. Like, that's the tradition that they're looking for. They want people who show up, but they really, at the end of the day, and I mean, again, this is a Tommy Thompsonism, like, who do the guys outside the paper factory who are at the bar in Rapids, who do they want to sit and have a beer with? Now, the irony, talk about Tammy Baldwin when she ran against Tommy. You know, like, she was the person they wanted to sit and have a beer with because he had gone Washington and they made ads to make that point. And, you know, that's how Tommy got perceived. I don't think it was necessarily fair. You had two people who, honestly, if you had to pick two people in politics to drink beer with, eat cheese curds and watch the Green Bay Packers, Tommy and Tammy would be pretty good.
We seem so much more polarized now, though, than even in that race. Why is that?
I think that's because of what you see at the Capitol in Madison and sort of where and how the Republicans have chosen to run post-Walker and govern post-Walker, which is a 51% strategy. But I'm not necessarily sure that's where the people of Wisconsin are. I mean, Todd and I say on our show all the time, you know, you know, Wisconsin wants cheerleaders. Tammy Baldwin, no one doubts that she loves the state and cheerleads for the state and works her butt off for the state.
The thing, Trey, you know, I've talked about this, usually at Republican events, they don't allow you to conceal carry. You can't take a weapon into the thing, right?
Right. For good reason.
Right.
For good reason. I just think it's never enough for the extremes. And honestly, like, having worked around the world in places that where extremism has taken hold, it's a cycle of extremism and it's a race to the bottom. And what ends up happening, we've done a bunch of research in Wisconsin about this, and in other states, you know, the more Trump does what he does and what Scott Walker started, he gets people on the right thinking the other side is their enemy, not trustworthy political opponents. And then what happens is the more they talk about enemies, the more the people on the other side respond to, I've got to defend myself. And it becomes a cycle. But I can tell you, like, when Todd and I were out traveling around the state, and we every night after we'd do the show, we'd go grab a few beers in a local bar and invite people, listeners, to come. Talking to the people in the bars across the state, they're tired of it. Most of them want problem solved. They want good public schools. They want workforce development. They want the Wisconsin idea restored. We're in all these college towns. They want, you know, law enforcement respected. They understand that elections in Wisconsin are genuinely clean and fair, and that Donald Trump lost in 2020 because they were going and not voting for Donald Trump, or maybe not voting for Joe Biden either, but they were voting for their congressman, or they were voting for, you know. So you counter political extremism by finding cognitive dissidence. Like, that's true in the United States. It's true wherever extremism is happening. You think about, and I say this a lot, you know, I speak to rich people on the coast who tend to be left-wing leaning. In fact, I did one for for a group of people, and I figured out that most of them bundled money for Nancy Pelosi. And I can tell you, I ended up saying to him, you know, I imagined myself doing a lot of things in politics. Speaking to all of you was never one of them. And one of the guys shot back, we never thought we'd be listening to a guy who worked for Mitch McConnell. Touche. But
just the one-on-one conversation.
Yeah, the one-on-one, cognitive dissonance is the key. So, you know, I said to those people, you know, a lot of the Trump people, you'd want them as your neighbor. They'll bring you a casserole if your mom's in hospice. In fact, I know that because my mom was in hospice for about 7 months, and I was out there every week. And they knew I was staying at a hotel, and I had people who were friends of mine who had sent me really nasty stuff about me being part of the Lincoln Project, who literally brought food to my hotel room, right? Like, because they're good people. Now, I had people on the left doing the same thing, right? They weren't asking that. There's a real cognitive dissonance, and you've got to ask questions and listen to what they're saying, and knowing who they are and how they live their life, and leading them to the incongruence between who and how they live their lives and what they're espousing politically.
I'm sorry to hear about your mom and that story about you being in a hotel when she was in hospice. But you said something very interesting there, that people on the left who knew you as a Republican started to bring you and her food over, and people on the right who were furious at you for being at the Lincoln Project started to bring food over too. And to me, that is a real Wisconsin anecdote, that people who look at Wisconsin as a split state don't think it's possible for us to have, you know, civil conversations with people who disagree with you. I have them all the time. I play Texas Hold'em. That's one of my bad sins. You know, one of my favorite players I was with last night's got a Trump sticker on his truck, and he's a really good guy. And when I said something on Facebook once to all my Trump friends, please don't vote for Trump, one of my smart alecky Madison friends said, get new friends. But that isn't the answer. I mean, the answer in the Wisconsin I want to live in is a Wisconsin where, yeah, we can disagree even pretty strongly on politics, but, you know, we can play cards together. We bring food to our friends whose moms are ailing. And I think that happens more than people think and should happen more. Trig, what do you think about that?
100%. I mean, I've said this on the show. I'll give some free advice to anybody who wants to run for governor of the state of Wisconsin, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Start traveling around the state and saying to people, we don't wear red MAGA hats or blue Black Lives Matter hats. We wear green and gold in Wisconsin. That's what we do. When people are at Lambeau Field or at Camp Randall, they're not asking who you voted for in the last election. When you're out on a deer stand, you don't care if the guy next to you how the guy next to you voted, or in the bar, right? Like, it's politicians that are ending up doing this and dividing. And it really, as we talked about, it started with Scott Walker for selfish reasons. Like, we have to get back to that. Like, who wants to live in a Wisconsin where everything is seen through a partisan lens? But that's extremism. And I'll tell you, you go to Belarus, you go to Putin's Russia, you go to any place where democracy doesn't exist, everything gets dragged into the politics of it. It's why you see stupid videos of Vladimir Putin playing hockey, scoring goals like he's Mark Johnson at the 1980 Olympics against NHL players. And the guy can't skate, unlike Mark Johnson.
How do we move Wisconsin forward and get over the polarization and have more productive, you know, civil conversations with those who don't agree with us?
Well, I think politically we have to have people start demanding that some core ideas that have made Wisconsin. And I'll tell you, everybody I know that kind of like me grew up in Wisconsin, ended up going off seeing other places, living other places. If I could convince my wife to move back to Wisconsin tomorrow, I would be in a truck headed back. Everybody, you know, there are some foundational things that have made Wisconsin great. And it's part of what Todd and I were trying to highlight when we went on the tour. The Wisconsin idea, the university system is you. I mean, I'm out here in Virginia. Is UVA a good school? Sure. would my daughter actually wants to go to Wisconsin, which might be my excuse to move back so I can have in-state tuition. I keep thinking of that. But
good luck.
UVA is a perfectly good school, but you go down there, it's just not the same vibe. The state colleges in Virginia are nothing like the state University of Wisconsin system. I mean, we were on the Eau Claire, Stevens Point. Those campuses are amazing. The Wisconsin idea, conservation. Mm-hmm. Like, when did that become a bad word? You like to deer hunt? You kind of like to have some conservation. You like to bird watch? Probably like the Mississippi Parkway. Mm-hmm. People like Gaylord Nelson and Tommy Thompson could work together. For God's sakes, we can work together now. Public education. You know, our public schools are the core of our small towns and communities. Like River Falls, everybody gets together at the high school football game. Then they go to Steve's Pizza and drink some beers at Johnny's afterwards. They don't, they're not asking, and they want their school supported. And, you know, there were things that were implemented, and I was in Tommy world when they were, like revenue caps. River Falls was a rural school then. It's now a suburb of the Twin Cities, but it's still because they haven't been updated. No one expected that solution to be 30 years sacrosanct. There needs to be an update. That's something everybody should be able to work together on. You know, democracy. We have clean elections. We generally have clean government in the state of Wisconsin compared to other places that I've worked. And that's under assault. Like, suddenly, you know, Donald Trump is basically still telling lies about the state of Wisconsin. Even Andrew Hitz come out and said that. Mm-hmm. Like, we should be outraged that he's doing that. He's trashing our reputation. He's taking something that doesn't belong to him and wrecking it. And honestly, I like to make fun of Scott Walker on Todd's show. I kind of did it on here. But what really galls me about Scott is he took something that wasn't his to take and wreck for personal ambition. And quite frankly, that's just outrageous. And it's not in the tradition of Wisconsin. Jim Doyle didn't do that. Pat Lucey didn't do that. Martin Schreiber didn't do that. Gaylord Nelson didn't do that. Bill Proxmire didn't do that. Tommy Thompson. You may hate Tommy's policies. Tommy didn't do that. Scott McCallum didn't do that. Scott Walker did that for personal ambition because he always wanted to be. We need to rise up and start saying no to this. And quite frankly, more than anything, what we need is some politicians who go around and trust the people in the center enough. And when I say center, I mean left of center, right of center, pretty much traditional Democrats, traditional Republicans, have faith in them that they're the people that from either side bring you casseroles or pizza when your mom's in hospice, not these crazies like Gableman and, you know, people who are constantly beating each other up over politics for personal ambition and power.
I'm with Trygve Olson about how we can get along here in Wisconsin, even when we don't always agree with each other. I do that with friends I play cards with. And for a similar perspective on how we get along with people who may be not seeing the same things we are in the world, here's Luke Mathers, executive producer of Civic Media, with a story of his own along these lines. I think when a lot of people not from Wisconsin look at Wisconsin and see a, you know, we're half red and we're half blue, and they act like, you know, the two sides never meet. I mean, the two sides are meeting all over Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
and actually getting along by and large at the bars and at the ballpark and, you know, at Friday night football and at church, if people are going to church. And it's not like we're at each other's throats here, which I think some people who aren't from Wisconsin, when they see the divide here, may think that's the case. How do you see people getting along even with different political, either strong beliefs or mild beliefs?
Some of my best friends disagree with me vehemently on politics. Like, it is night and day what we believe, how we believe a government should function. But at the end of the day, I care about their kids. They care about me and my wife. That we care about each other. Because we do have commonalities. We root for some of the same sports teams. We We do the same activities. We love playing bar trivia or whatever it may be. We can disagree on things, but it doesn't mean that we can't like each other still. And so for me, I stood up. I was best man for one of my very good friends. And we could not be more different on the sides of the political spectrum for a really long time. Now, he himself has kind of started to be more of a moderate individual because he himself feels like conservative politicians, Republican elected officials have more or less left him behind. But that's not necessarily something that I think may have happened had I just been like, no, I don't agree with you politically, and therefore I'm going to cut you out of my life.
Yeah, your social influence on him may have had an impact too.
I think hearts and minds are the way to go. And by being in these communities that we represent, like Civic Media, and being there in those individual relationships with family members, friends, just acquaintances that you interact with, trying to cut them all out, not being there, disengaging is not the way forward. Engaging in civil and kind dialogue is really what it takes to get somebody to change their perspective, change their point of view, and change their opinion on things.
And I think it's really important for people on both sides not to demonize the people on the other side, not to think everybody who doesn't agree with you politically is an evil person or has horns on their heads or is going straight to hell.
There's aspects that it's like, okay, we all have to agree on some common principles, and the democratic process, people voting, civic engagement, being a part of your communities and getting involved, that's something I think we can all agree upon.
Yeah, for me, with my friends who were Trump supporters, January 6th was the issue. So right after January 6th, I would communicate with them and said, I know you're a decent person. You can't agree with what happened on January 6th, can you? And almost all of them said, no, that was a horrible thing for this country, and recognized it. And so that there's some common ground right there. The January 6th proponents, it's hard to have a conversation with them. I grant you that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a lot harder when, again, it gets back to where you're getting your information, where there's some folks that are trying to undermine what happened that day and downplay it, say that it wasn't there. We have elected officials in our state here in Wisconsin that say, oh, it was just tourists, according to U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. And so there is definitely some downplaying there. And it's important to know where your information is coming from, and we have to agree upon common principles and go for it.
And there's a reason Ron Johnson wants to whitewash what happened on January 6th, because he was complicit in what happened on January 6th.
Yeah. It seems that there's a lot of information that the public still should get to know, because that senator is not answering the questions about how involved or downplaying how involved he was in the plot to overturn the Electoral College results.
I'm Charles Franklin. I'm director of the Marquette Law School poll. We've been doing the Marquette poll since January of 2012.
Do you have any hopeful signs that come out of your polling about either civic culture or how we get past this pretty toxic polarization that we've been living in?
Yeah, I would actually turn to anecdote for this. We monitor telephone interviews to make sure the interviewer's asking the questions right and that sort of thing. It's a usual quality control thing. And I am struck that most of our respondents range from somewhat reluctant but willing to do the interview to pretty enthusiastic to do the interview. But what I'm struck by is the tone of sincerity in their voices at either end of that spectrum. And for Republicans and Democrats alike, that I wish it were possible for people to hear fellow citizens talking about politics and issues in a way that does make you feel like there is still hope, that political leadership and campaigns may not be emphasizing the more positive side of civic life, but it's still alive out there when you talk to ordinary voters and just listen to them talk about their concerns.
And they want their elected officials to solve their problems too.
Yes. Which is not to deny polarization, because, you know, we are still part of that. But if you only listen to the most polarized voices, I think you may easily lose sight that there is still an involvement in civic life that lives on out there.
Thanks, Charles Franklin, for giving us that little upbeat note to end on as we're closing out the first episode of this Wisconsin Forward podcast. Actually, Charles will be back again for our next episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast as he gives us his analysis of the presidential race here in Wisconsin and what his poll numbers show. And then we'll get Todd Albo's perspective on what the election means for Wisconsin and for the country as a whole, with our democracy hanging by a thread. So please join me, Matt Rothschild, for this next episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Network. If you like the podcast, please subscribe to the show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or your favorite podcast platform. Learn more about the show and download episodes right from the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.